Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Welcome to this week's episode of In the Jar, where a friendly face ain't far. This week, we're going to do things a little different. In the past with our show, we've been pretty clip heavy, and we wanted to get a bit more focused on what we love talking about and what we think we can bring the most value to you by talking about. So, being in the sports business, we're going to talk about this week heavily what's going on in the NFL on the business side, signings, current news about what's going on with the league and its lawsuit around NFL Sunday Ticket. And we're also going to take a look into folks like Alvin Kamara looking to get a new contract in a tough running back market, how Trevor Lawrence got paid and how this stacks him up against the other young premier quarterbacks in the league in regards to the guaranteed money they're getting. Isaiah Buggs, who you guys might remember from the University of Alabama, not as much, still a great player, but not as much in his three seasons with the Steelers and two with the Lions, now with the Chiefs. He's in trouble for something, and the list goes on and on. Second half of the show, I wanted to impart my attempt at wisdom in regards to financial endeavors, that's investing, current events, financial tips, and we'll address questions from you guys and the public around what I should do with my money, what is the best way to go about investing. All of these things we're going to continue to unpack on the show every week. This week we talk Tesla, we talk Elon Musk, OpenAI, Apple, and NVIDIA. Okay, so it's a different episode. I wanted to let you guys know in advance that it's going to be a different episode. I hope you guys enjoy. Let me know what you think in the comments. Hit the like button. It really helps me, really helps our show. Continue to spread the good word and click that subscribe button as well. Really look forward to getting into this week's episode 23 of In the Jar with me, Dupe. Hope you guys enjoy. Let's get to it. All right, we're back. Episode 23, In the Jar, your boy, Dupe. And let's get right into it. So, Chiefs Isaiah Buggs charged with domestic violence and burglary in Tuscaloosa. Kansas City defensive lineman Isaiah Buggs has been arrested for the second time in a month after he was booked on a domestic violence burglary charge in Alabama on Sunday morning and released, according to online records. So, what I understand from this is that Buggs had a Rottweiler and a pit bull at his house that authorities found that were severely neglected and severely malnourished. The Chiefs were aware of the case but declined to comment. On May 30th, Buggs turned himself in after he was charged with two misdemeanor counts of second-degree animal cruelty in Tuscaloosa. Buggs' agent says that his client is a victim of an ongoing subversive campaign to force the closure of the hookah lounge he owns in Tuscaloosa. Buggs is a dog, man, and he's only 27. I think he played that five tech over at Bama. And I watched some film amazing with his hands, complete dog. He got back there as a 3 and a 5 technique. And I was going to show some film of his today here on In the Jar, but I ain't gonna, because if you got dogs, brother, if you're going to take that liberty upon yourself to lead the life of a dog, let alone two, you got to take care of them, brother. I don't care about the film, and I ain't going to show it, because you don't do that. Plain and simple. He played 3 seasons with the Steelers and 2 with the Lions before joining the Chiefs in January as a practice squad player. So you see potential in a player like him at Bama. The prospects that a talent of his caliber could bring to the table. And we're in year 6 flirting with practice squad. You got dogs, you don't take care of them, you got problems. And that's going to bleed into other areas of your life. I hope it works out for him. Hope he learns from this. But the Chiefs have had a tumultuous offseason with Rashee Rice. In that case, I believe still ongoing. And it's just one of those things, man. It's you hate to see a great player like him doing things like that. It's just that simple. Okay, next deal. Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers is away on an ayahuasca retreat, NFL insider hints, after New York Jets QB sparked controversy by missing the start of practice. So, basically, Aaron Rodgers is in a place in his career where he ain't got to listen to anyone. The value he brings is inherent. And the effect he's had on the Jets locker room since he's been there is nothing short of monumental. And I think that comes from a vast awareness of knowing of him, knowing what works for him, right? He says, hey, ayahuasca ain't the most conventional way to take care of yourself. Maybe it was back in the ancient days. Maybe it should be more today. But nonetheless, my boy has not been to any of the workouts, and he's racked up some fines in the process because he's out making sure that he's attacking his demons head on. And I commend you for that, Aaron Rodgers. I do. Especially as a leader, it takes a special kind of courage to venture into different practices regarding your mental health, your spiritual health, and your physical health. Because at the end of the day, them three is all connected. So, Aaron Rodgers' unexcused absence that caused him to miss all of New York Jets' mandatory minicamp this week was because of an ayahuasca retreat, an NFL insider claims. It's going to cost him more than $100,000 in fines, which is obviously peanuts to one of the more successful quarterbacks in the history of the NFL. The best answer, so this is the insider, I guess. The best I can answer this right now that I feel solid about is that he is somewhere that they could not excuse and maintain credibility with the rest of the locker room, but would be expected, would not be an out of left field thing for him. So obviously we talked about his effect on the locker room, the value he brings. He's, and this article starts to spiral south. This is from the Daily Mail, United Kingdom publication. So it starts talking about how he's anti-vax, and it gets political because anybody who speaks the truth these days is going to be a martyr to some, unfortunately, right? My biggest regret of my life next to quitting football at Stanford University was getting vaccinated. And I can only imagine if I could side by side feel how I feel on a daily basis compared to if I hadn't got the jab. But I digress. Coulda, shoulda, woulda. I'm just glad I ain't boosted. Let me tell you that. But anyway, let's see if there's anything worth addressing at the rest of this article. Okay, Rodgers' mispractice during his mandatory minicamp will cost the 40-year-old Rodgers $16,953, with a second absence nearly doubling to $33,908, and a final missed day raising to a fine of $50,855. You can't put a price on your spiritual health, brother. And Aaron Rodgers is leading the way for other professional athletes to explore non-conventional avenues of care, mentally, physically, spiritually. And I commend you for that, Aaron Rodgers. I really do. It's a beautiful thing to see. Hopefully, players start experimenting more with mushrooms, whether that be psilocybin or the non-psychedelic kind that, you know, kind of help you in other ways. Cordyceps, lion's mane, reishi, turkey tail, chaga, all of those fungi are a part of my daily supplemental routine, and I can feel the difference mentally. I can feel the difference in terms of the vibration. I can feel the difference physically. And these fungi, they have such a beautiful role in our earth that we live in. And that's my hippie rant digression, hillbilly hippie rant digression there. So anyways, Aaron Rodgers is very clearly working on his spiritual side and probably a bit more than that. And he's going to come back fresh. I can tell you right now, he's getting old. And I'm sure he's at the forefront of taking care of his self in the way that only he can. But I'm excited to see. Hopefully we get more than four snaps this year. I could almost bank on it. Next deal. This is arguably the most welcome news for me personally coming from the NFL this week. Bengals wide receiver T. Higgins signs his franchise tender. He's officially in the fold for the upcoming season. He's going to make it to camp day one. He's held out of the mini camp events that have unfolded throughout the NFL due to his contract situation. Higgins signed on Saturday. And this is from Adam Schefter. So he's now expected to be at training camp. It was a three-day mini camp that he missed. Joe Burrow's been adamant about the fact that he and T have been talking. They're fired up to throw around here come July, and Higgins is set to earn $21.8 million this season under the tag. So he and the Bengals can still negotiate a long-term deal until July 15th, but the likelihood of that is not high. And notoriously, you know, Bengals owner Mike Brown has been tight with his wallet, and he's also got Jamar Chase starting to ask for a contract extension. These guys, they got to be paid. They're worth every cent that they get paid to the organization. And Mike Brown's got to prioritize that. I know in the past with the Bengals, it's been a big topic of discussion whether the executives at the top in the Bengals organization communicate with the players effectively. We heard some rumblings about Trey Hendrickson earlier this offseason. DJ Reader departed, and we talked about that here on the show. Due to apparently a lack of communication, he's going to suit up with the Detroit Lions this year. But it looks like we are doing what we're supposed to do with the guys we need to do what we're supposed to do with. So last year, obviously, Higgins was hampered by some injuries, and he played in 12 games. Still had 42 catches, 865 yards, and 856 yards, and five touchdowns. So I'm fired up. We're going to have a good little core here in Cincinnati on offense. The running back position is the biggest question mark. I think Chase Brown will step up and do what he needs to do in the backfield. Maybe we'll have another young cat emerge out of there. Going to miss Joe Mixon, but in the passing game, the Bengals passing game is looking good. We got Mike Gesicki. You got Iasovas. They started to nickname this guy Yoshi. He's a dog, and I don't think enough people are giving this guy credit for what he did last season as a rook, right? And then you got the kid from Bama, Burton, I believe is his name, who, according to TJ Houshmandzadeh, already knew exactly where he needed to line up a day or so after he got the playbook. I guess he was going through, this young kid Burton from Bama was going through some reps with old TJ Houshmandzadeh. And TJ was just thrilled with him because he said he had only had the playbook for a day and he knew, he called off almost every play in the playbook and old Burton knew where to line up. So look out for, what's his name? Is it Jermaine? Yeah, look out for Jermaine Burton to make a big splash as a rookie in Cincinnati. Not to mention the fact that you got the two big dogs, Ja'Marr Chase and T. And we also beefed up the O-line to try and protect Joe. I'm fired up about it. Fired up about what the Bengals got coming up this season.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
All right, next deal. Trevor Lawrence in contract news, and we'll get into a lot of contract talk here today with Trevor Lawrence. Alvin Kamara is asking for more money, and then I checked the free agent unsigned players that are still available in the NFL on SpoTrack, and my God, brother, there are some guys out there. So, Trevor Lawrence extension, Jaguars make the QB the highest paid player in NFL history with a 5-year, $275 million contract, on par with what Joey Burr is making here. So, they reached an agreement Friday, which it was the 14th. Deal's worth $275 million, ties Joe Burrow. Lawrence becomes the fourth quarterback to make $200 million fully guaranteed in a contract. Joining Deshaun Watson, he received $230 million guaranteed. Joe Burrow, he received $219 million guaranteed. And Justin Herbert, he received about $218 million guaranteed. So Lawrence is going to get $142 million in the bank at signing. Already gotten it probably. Already hit his account. Get paid, young. Get paid. Get paid, young. Get paid. So Lawrence becomes a fourth quarterback. Like we said, these articles are fun. They repeat themselves a lot. So he made some statement. We're excited to stay in Jacksonville. We love the city. The thing about NFL players publicly speaking on stuff, I don't know, man. Other than like Aaron Rodgers and we talked about it, right? Aaron Rodgers feels in such a place. He's so indispensable that I feel like you get to a certain echelon. And I even saw this in the college game where certain guys provide so much value in the locker room and on the field that they feel more comfortable to express themselves freely. A guy like Trevor Lawrence, yes, he got freaking paid, and it's clear the Jaguars believe in him, but I would imagine a guy in his age, I think he's about my age, would probably hold, he's got to get later in his career and play some more ball before he's like in an Aaron Rodgers type of place. But it's clear that the premier crop of young quarterbacks has been identified. You could have questions about Deshaun Watson getting paid like he did, right? Herbert has shown, I think, that he's a gunslinger and that he can play. And then obviously I'm biased, but Joe Burrow is the cream of the crop of this group, in my opinion. We're blessed to have him in Cincinnati. Okay. The contract for Lawrence also has a no trade clause, and it'll pay him $82.6 million in cash the first year of the deal. So what else do we have? Everybody's making statements. They're excited. They're thrilled to fired up to have Trevor staying. And then we got Alvin Kamara on the other side of this coin. We've talked in the past. I think we even talked last week about Christian McCaffrey and how he's now the highest paid running back in the game and still paid less than 12 to 15 receivers in the league right now. So you see Kamara struggling to get a deal. He is a bit on the decline. I'd love to see him play some real ball. He was hampered by injuries last year, been hampered by injuries. He even said in a statement that he's got low pressure on the rear tire. So he said, so ESPN's Jeremy Fowler reported on Sunday on SportsCenter, I can confirm he missed the final day of minicamp, and that was contract related. So he's open to doing a rework 2-year deal, strengthen his guarantees in year one. So not a lot of momentum, according to the sources. And I can see what Kamara's agent is doing, right? He is trying to get as much guaranteed money up front as he can, knowing that Kamara's health is not what it once was. Great player, jackknife player. Those don't come a dime a dozen, right? Or they do come a dime a dozen. I'm not sure which side of that euphemism I'm trying to use. But it's clear that the Saints know that too. And for that reason, they want to... NFL organizations are just like any other business. They're going to pay their employees what they think is a fair value so that they can keep cash open. They're trying to keep the expenses as low as possible, right? Even organizations like the NFL, and we'll talk a little bit later about how the NFL may be strapped for cash. So what else? He's 29, and he signed a $75 million contract in 2020. Missed 4 games last year. Slight decline, but he still went for over 1,000 total yards for the 7th straight season and remains one of the NFL's most versatile backs. That is true. He's a hell of a pass catcher out of the backfield. And according to a statement he made, apparently his teammates understand what he's doing, why he's doing it. It's natural for players, let alone teammates, to understand each other's situations. And again, communication has been upkept by Kamara with he and his teammates. So hopefully a minimal impact in the locker room for the Saints. But nonetheless, Alvin Kamara is trying to get paid, young. Get paid. All right, what else do we got? Jake Bates, next deal. Lions signing UFL kicker Jake Bates to a 2-year deal. The Detroit Lions are signing the big-footed UFL kicker to a 2-year contract this week. His agent, Marty Majid, told ESPN's Adam Schefter on Saturday. So I did a Google search on Jake Bates' agent, Marty Majid, and he looks exactly like his name sounds, dude. I mean, look at this guy, dude. That is a party animal. Right there, dude. Sunglasses at night. Mustache goatee combo. Reminiscent of Stone Cold Steve Austin in a way. This guy's a party animal. And he's negotiating deals for his clients. He's getting his UFL client into the league, getting him paid, and he's got a big boot. One of the field goals he hit in the UFL this season was, let's see, let's get back to the, it was something, one kick he had in the season opener against the St. Louis Battlehawks was just 2 yards from Justin Tucker's NFL record of 66 yards. I bet this guy's a hell of a golfer. So the Lions got something to be excited about. Jake Bates has got something to be excited about. And I think that's the beauty of the United Football League. Not just that the Birmingham Stallions are creme de la creme in the UFL, but the fact that guys get to play ball in the spring, get some film on the Rolodex, even if you're on the bad side of the NFL's good graces, right? And this is a living testament of it. I do think that there's a greater demand for specialists in the NFL, kickers, long snappers, punters, and you've seen a lot of kickers make names for themselves coming from less orthodox paths. Jake Bates was a soccer player and didn't start playing football until his senior year of high school. So, and I think there's a fellow from the Cowboys, I can't remember his name, 17, who was just phenomenal. And I think he was a UFL, USFL, etc. guy. I remember, what was it even called? Something Football Alliance. But back when I was in college, we had a couple buddies from our team kind of on the fringe of the NFL, and they were playing for the Birmingham Iron. I forget which league it's called. Let's see. Birmingham Iron League. What was it? What were they in? The Alliance of American Football. The Birmingham Iron were playing in the Alliance of American Football. And I'll tell you what, man, when you were thirsty for some football on a Sunday in February in Birmingham, Alabama, you pull up to the stadium at 9 a.m. and treat it like a real deal fall game day. I'm talking Mad Dog 40-40. I'm talking all the shenanigans you can think of, tailgating leading up to a football game. And it was a hell of a time. I'm really a big proponent of these minor league football organizations. It seems like they've got it figured out. Obviously, the Alliance of American Football doesn't exist anymore. The USFL has now become the UFL. There was the XFL for a season. That didn't work out. But the people that originally invested in those leagues, people like The Rock, I would imagine recouped their losses and reinvested it into this new UFL, because I haven't been hearing about any cash problems with the UFL. So hopefully we can keep that going. I'm sure we can in some capacity, because there's people just like me, people just like us, that know that it's a hell of a chance for young players, redheaded stepchild type players that maybe haven't found a place for themselves in the NFL yet. It's a great opportunity for them to prove themselves on film and get a chance in the NFL. Is the XFL still going? I don't think so. Yeah. It was a professional American. Yeah, I thought I was tripping for a second. But the UFL, that is the authority on minor league football currently. Okay. Next deal. And this is what we mentioned earlier, but ESPN offered to carry NFL Sunday Ticket for a significantly lower price, and the NFL turned their nose up at it. And these records are all being found as the NFL is participating in a lawsuit in Los Angeles. It's on trial right now, but it was talking about how the NFL Sunday Ticket package allows out-of-market fans to view their favorite team's games every week. This week, some details came out. An email was revealed in court this week that showed ESPN had offered to carry the NFL Sunday Ticket package for $70 starting in 2023. Last season, when the package moved to YouTube TV after years on DirecTV, they charged over $300 for it and are offering it for $349 this season. The trial is expected to wrap up this week, though I don't know when any sort of verdict or judgment will be rendered or if it will affect the way Sunday Ticket's offered this season. There's another deal on here. So here's a little bit more insight into the lawsuit. Okay, so it's a 3-week trial to determine whether it allowed DirecTV from 2012 to 2022 to sell the broadcast to out-of-market games via its Sunday Ticket package. The class action lawsuit represents nearly 2.5 million customers, individuals, bar owners that argues that the NFL violated antitrust laws restricting competition in an effort to protect its lucrative deals with Fox and CBS for Sunday afternoon games. It seeks $7.1 billion in damages, which could be tripled to over $21 billion. Plaintiffs argue that the NFL made the cost of Sunday ticket artificially high in order to cash in on desperate, hardcore fans willing to pay whatever to see their favorite team or specific out-of-market games, as well as bars that needed to attract customers. In doing so, the league priced out most fans, thus forcing them to watch whatever games on local television, the lawsuit contends. So basically, I don't know who's what entity's representing the customers of NFL Sunday Ticket, but the NFL has argued that it was a premium service and thus came at a premium price. NFL attorney said the case is about choice. This is a valuable premium product. Think about all the choices available to fans. We want as many people as possible to watch the free broadcasts. So here's another, so Apple TV came in and proposed making the Sunday Ticket part of its offerings and no additional charge. According to CourthouseNews.com, an email presented into evidence showed ESPN wanted to charge just $70, like we said, for the season. New England Patriots, Robert Kraft, their owner, Robert Kraft, said in a deposition that we're not looking to get lots of people. We want to keep it a premium offering. So that's the NFL stance, which tells me that, yes, they're doing exactly what the court's accusing them of. And their counter is that we're doing it because we can. And it makes sense. I read a story. So here's the story. Let's see. A Philadelphia fan who lives in Chicago, for example, currently has to subscribe to YouTube TV for $72.99 a month and then buy access to every game played on Sunday afternoons for $349. Even if he or she may only be interested in watching the Eagles. Worse, 12 of Philly's 17 games in 2024 are currently scheduled to kick off on Sunday afternoon, thus part of the Sunday ticket window, and it's likely some of them, namely two against Dallas, will be broadcast nationally and thus in Chicago anyway. So it's possible that Eagles fans will pay $349 for as few as 7 or 8 games, potentially $50 per broadcast. And this doesn't include the season opener against the Packers, which will air exclusively on Peacock, thus another cost. You might as well, I mean, a Philly fan living in Chicago, I just disarmed my own point, but I was about to say, you might as well damn buy tickets to the game. You know what I'm saying? Everybody said, what's the point of going to a game when I could just watch the best seat in the house at home? Well, take a look at the cost. I think we talked about the cost of a fan wanting to watch every game in the NFL last season. It was north of $800. So the NFL's kind of at a, we've talked about the streaming deals, the business side of broadcasting football games and sporting events, and we're kind of at a crossroads here, right? Innovation with the streaming services has kind of disrupted the way we consume our sports and therefore our football, and we're kind of at an intersection in business where the cable networks are starting to become more irrelevant. You have companies and streaming services like Apple and Amazon and Netflix coming in to contend for the rights. And these companies, they have cash. They're able to come in and say, okay, we can offer the consumer a better deal. And the NFL just says, no, we ain't doing that. We're a premium product. Pay it. I hope the NFL directs course. I can see the argument from saying we are a premium product. They are a premium product. I can't wait for football season. But the NFL Sunday ticket stuff is clearly becoming a problem in terms of what we're expecting from the league. And that is to put the fans first. Put them first. the fans and the players, they are what keeps the engine chugging along. So maybe the NFL wins this lawsuit and they don't learn from any of this. I doubt they'll lose it. They probably have access to the best lawyers in the world. Nice voice crack. They probably have access to the best lawyers in the world. And it's unlikely that any changes will come this season. But I do foresee a fair amount of change coming in the seasons to follow. I do. It's just, like I said, the fans are the most important part. At the end of the day, football is entertainment. And it's great entertainment at that. And so the fans are what makes this bus go. What's the next deal? So we talked a little bit about this earlier, but I just wanted to address this list of remaining free agents that are in the market. The one that stuck out to me the most was Darius Shaquille Leonard, who's only 28 and spent his last season with the Eagles after departing from the Colts. And I got a big emotional tie to this guy. He was the leader of our defense when I worked with the Colts in 2019. He's a hell of a player. He's got a freaking nose for the ball like nobody I've ever seen. And his strips, the way Darius Leonard forces turnovers, Shaquille Leonard, sorry, the way he forces turnovers is unique to that of someone like Charles Tillman, Peanut Tillman. Y'all remember this fella for the Bears. He just come in and pop that ball out, and it's like you time that perfectly. You have to. It's almost like I think a guy like Charles Tillman or Shaq Leonard would be a good mixed martial artist, good boxer, because they know they have a concept of range and where to punch the ball. Because a lot of people might not know this, but in football, especially at the linebacker position, safety position, you're covering a lot of space. You're trying to cover that ground and make a play. And so not only are you worried about making the tackle, securing the tackle, because you look like an ass when you get a tackle broken. I'm the best person to explain that feeling. Right? You're not just thinking about finishing the tackle now. You're so dialed in on punching that ball out. And let me tell you, the force it takes when somebody's got a good points of pressure on the football. I call it, my coaches called it the 7 points of pressure, right? You got bang, 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 bang. And then I think the last point of pressure was your mind. My buddy Dan, he played receiver at Samford and Samford University, had a good career. And they would say the last point of pressure is your mind. And he'd run down the field like this. They made him run for that. It was fucking geeky. But anyways, no, you're coming in. A guy like Shaquille Leonard punches the ball out. And if you miss that punch, you risk either punching hard into really one of two shells, right? The shoulder pads, or even worse, the helmet or the face mask, which is completely made of metal. So you can, I tried to strip a guy one time. I tried to punch at the ball. I missed the ball, and I punched him in the face mask. And God damn, did that shit hurt, boy. Let me tell you, it's a risk. You're taking a risk trying to punch that ball out. But Shaq Leonard is on that list. Michael Thomas is on that list. Also, egregiously, in my opinion, Hunter Renfrow is still a free agent. He's 28, and the kid just plays smart, man. He plays smart. He runs smart routes. He's able to find open grass to make a catch. And he gets down, too. When he knows a big hit is coming, he gets down because he's a smaller guy. And so he's aware of his longevity. It's clear. So I don't understand how a team hasn't picked him up yet. Michael Thomas, bit of a different story, struggled with injuries. Also on that list, Cam Akers. I don't know why Damian Harris is listed on here because he retired. And he's from Berea, Kentucky. He was a hell of a player in high school, hell of a player at Bama, and he had a good NFL career. Xavien Howard, it's obvious why he's on that list. He's got problems. Seems like the guy's got problems. Hope he figures them out because he's a great player. And Adoree Jackson, who's only 28, he was a hell of a prospect coming out of Southern Cal, I believe, right before the NIL era started and kids started transferring to four or five schools in the matter of 3 years. David Bakhtiari, also on that list. He's 32. He's had he's taken some physical beatings, I would imagine. So who knows if David Bakhtiari will call it a career or not. You know, at 32, playing down there in the trenches, it ain't easy being cheesy. All right, what do we got next? Stephon Gilmore. So Stephon Gilmore also seems to be a guy on this list. I don't know why old Spotrac didn't have him on there, but it says he's being patient and waiting for the right opportunity. So he's the last defensive back to win the NFL's Defensive Player of the Year award, which he did in 19 with the Patriots. He's a five-time Pro Bowl selection, and I just can't think of a player more focused at most times than Stephon Gilmore. The guy's just consistent. It's very clear he's got an even-keeled personality that's very hard to shake. He's a calm guy, and at corner, you got to kind of be that way, right? I mean, cornerback is a scary position because one mess up, and you're 7 points on the board down, right? It just takes getting beat deep one time. It just takes getting thrown off leverage one time and a playmaker gets his hands around the ball and gets down the field. You know what I'm saying? So Stephon Gilmore, I think, is an exemplary embodiment of showing up every rep, very focused, very consistent. And even his play with Dallas last year, I was watching some film on him before we're shooting here. And the guy, he gets in, and he's got his hand in there. He makes plays, he makes breakups, and he forces turnovers too. And he's getting to be an older age. He's in year 13, so he's been playing a long time. And he says he's just patient, waiting for the right opportunity. He's become a high-level journeyman. He spent time with the Pats. He suited up for the Panthers, the Colts, and most recently the Cowboys. So there are a couple of teams that could be in the mix for him. The Chiefs with Legarius Sneed on the way out. You got the Ravens, who have made some high-profile signings in the offseason, namely Derrick Henry. We'll see how they look. I imagine scary. And as a Bengals fan, I don't like that. Detroit would be a great place for him and fit his desire to join a contender and give him an opportunity to mentor corners like Terrion Arnold, who is the 24th overall pick. And then, that's all I've got to say about that. This article predicts that he'll stay with the Cowboys. We'll see. It'll be exciting. I guess he's negotiating his contract right now. So we're kind of getting into crunch time in the NFL of teams figuring out, all right, which guys are we going to pay? Which guys are we going to kind of set aside and see what happens? It'll be fun. Okay, to wrap up the football talk, we've got a fun article. I just personally wanted to take a look at this. An ode to NFL Street, picking the Indianapolis Colts all-time 7-on-7 playground squad. This guy says he wants Anthony Richardson in there at quarterback. I remember playing NFL Street 2 with Peyton Manning, and I mean, he's in there slinging it, right? But in a game like NFL Street, you kind of got to have a jackknife of a quarterback. Mike Vick is the name that comes to mind when I was playing old NFL Street on the PlayStation 2 back in the day. Jumping off walls, over people, throwing behind your back, dimes down the field. Mahomes has made that a reality in modern day football. But Anthony Richardson could be a better option than Peyton simply because I remember playing with Peyton in NFL Street 2. And when it breaks down and you got to get out of the pocket, especially in 7-on-7 street video game football, Peyton was not the most mobile. And he'd probably tell you that himself. In NFL Street, I'm saying. And so Anthony Richardson, I think this article pays homage to him in that regard. Edgerrin James at running back. It's hard to argue that. Marshall Faulk, Eric Dickerson, Jonathan Taylor mentioned. Outside receiver one, Marvin Harrison. Let's see. And then he also considered Reggie Wayne, T.Y. Hilton, and Michael Pittman Jr. Left tackle, obviously, Quentin Nelson. Bob Sanders at linebacker. Also under consideration, Darius Shaq Leonard. So the final squad has Anthony Richardson at QB. This is for NFL Street 2. This is someone's hypothetical Colts all-time NFL Street 2, 7-on-7 on offense. And the thing about NFL Street that I'm just remembering is that your offensive guys have to play, like, everybody in NFL Street 2 played both ways. So at QB, you got Anthony Richardson, running back Edgerrin James, wide receiver 1, Marvin Harrison, wide receiver 2, Bob Sanders. You got Quentin Nelson at left tackle, Dwight Freeney at center, and right tackle DeForest Buckner. He's got Bob Sanders in there at linebacker, Edgerrin and Marvin at corner, right end Dwight Freeney. That's hard. Nose tackle Quentin Nelson. I bet Quentin Nelson would do some damage down in the trenches defensively. He's like a big old bull, dude. And then left end DeForest Buckner. It's hard to argue against that lineup, brother. Especially playing Madden. I love playing with Indy because you got that inside force in DeForest Buckner at the three technique. It's really hard to argue against a football team with a good nose and a good couple of three techniques that can use their hands and get back to the quarterback. Because it's one thing, it's obviously a threat if you got somebody coming down from the outside like TJ Watt, like Myles Garrett, like Trey Hendrickson. But when you can get push on the inside, and my buddy Michael Pierce, former teammate at Sanford, Michael Pierce, really good at this, getting pressure on the quarterback using your hands and your base to get in there and drive. Big Mike likes to just drive them back into the quarterback and disrupt that way. It's not always defensively about who makes the tackle. Sometimes it's about who kind of forced the tackle, if that makes sense, right? If you got a nose that drives the damn center all the way back into the quarterback and flushes him out for the defensive end to come and make the sack, I would argue the nose tackle made that play, right? So in Madden, when I'm playing with the Colts, I'll use DeForest Buckner, use the hands, time it right, get off, and get pressure on the quarterback, and it changes the whole game. It really does. And real football is not much different than Madden. Wow, I didn't see myself saying that this week. I hope Madden gets better. I hope college football isn't just a carbon copy of Madden. We're going to start streaming that when NCAA Football 25 comes out, and I'm really fired up. I'm really fired up, but I hope the quality of these games that EA Sports makes, I hope they get a little more serious with it. That's all I'll say. I've aired out my grievances against EA Sports time after time, and I'll continue to do so to try and be a voice for the people. But for now, we reminisce on NFL Street 2. Okay. So now we're going to go over into the, obviously Conor McGregor is out at UFC 303 versus Michael Chandler. Michael Chandler said he's ready to go whenever. I would imagine in the next 2 to 3 months that the UFC comes up with a separate card for Conor McGregor and Michael Chandler. It wouldn't be surprising to me because they've already got some good cards booked through the next half of the year, the last half of the year. So it would only make sense for Dana White to come in and make a separate card for Conor McGregor and Michael Chandler. It's been in the works for so long. It's been 4 years since Conor won a fight, 3 years since he's been in the octagon, and the people want to see it. So hopefully we'll get to. I think we will. But there is a chance that Conor just says, hey, my health isn't where it once was. I need to retire. And we have to make peace with that potential outcome too. So we're going to get into some market stuff, some finance tips, some investing talk, current happenings in the market, because doing what I do for work, I meet with households all the time talking about their deepest, darkest aspects of their financial life. I feel compelled to try and impart some wisdom, some things that I may take for granted, but others may not. So we're going to answer some of the, we're going to answer, we're going to take a question a week. We'll see how this works out. This is obviously a new deal. We're going to take questions, maybe one question, maybe a couple from the week, and try and answer those to the best of our ability. So, let's see what we got. Here's a common question. Okay, will investing make you rich? And what I found is, looking at the questions our viewers are asking, the questions that the public is asking, that a lot of these are obviously open-ended questions. So open-ended questions are the ones with value. Yes, investing can make you rich, but it takes the right disciplines, it takes the right strategies to get there. And the number one ingredient is time. So the way I've seen success managing my portfolio personally is picking 5 to 8, maybe 10 companies and cryptocurrencies that I like, that I believe in, and doing something called dollar cost averaging. Dollar cost averaging is simply, if I can put it into how I do it personally, and you can do this with Robinhood, you can say, hey, I want to buy 10 bucks a day, every market day. I want to buy $5 a day. I want to buy $1 a day of X, Y, and Z stock, C, Y, and X stock, and Y, X, and Z stock. How'd I do there? And it will automatically do that for you. You can set it and forget it. And I've talked about it briefly on the show before, but the more detached you can become from your finances, your financial situation in general, not just in investing, but in expense tracking, budgeting, if you can detach as much as possible personally, the better. And so how do you do that? We're all human. We're all imperfect. You simply systemize as much as you can. And dollar cost averaging is a powerful vehicle for that. Robinhood doesn't charge any commissions on trades. They got in trouble for that a couple years ago because these brokerage firms that were fulfilling the orders on Robinhood were taking backdoor cuts of each trade. And Robinhood, although it doesn't affect the consumer directly, didn't disclose that, got slapped with a fine by the SEC. Now they disclose it. And the number one thing to remember in the financial services industry, if you're watching this and you work with a financial professional, the number one measure of success that you should hold your financial advisor to is how much is he or she disclosing to you? Are they honest? If they don't know the answer to a question, do they say, I don't know, or try to put together some salesy word salad, silver tongue devil shit on the table, right? The problem I have with a lot of financial professionals like me is that they show up in a suit and they smile and they tell you everything you want to hear, and then you get to working with them. I said this last week, right? It's just like a job interview. You're going to put your best foot forward when you're first meeting with someone that you're trying to make your client. I'm talking from the advisor's perspective. But I've seen too many times, I've seen it firsthand, a guy gets a household closed. I'm talking an advisor, gets a household closed. He gets them to agree to do business with him. And then the second they sign the dotted line, the advisor can't be bothered in dealing with him. It's sad, man, because it's a lot of financial professionals treat this business as how much money can I make and not how many households can I help? How many people can I make a profound impact in the lives of? And a lot of advisors got that story down, and they'll tell it to you tongue in cheek. But when the bullets start flying and you get in the trenches with someone, they'll show you who they really are. So I got a problem with a lot of people in our industry. They make stuff complex to understand purposefully, right? They want households to be confused so that they keep coming back to them. And it's bullshit. It's bullshit. I'm here to call it out. If somebody comes to you and says, hey, I know exactly what fund you should invest in, I know exactly what stock you should invest in, what I'm saying is always right. run. Run the other way. Don't let him be a part of your life. And I know too many. And the annuity business, the insurance business, that's a whole nother aspect of manipulation, in my opinion. I don't sell annuities. I don't work with insurance companies, and I used to. And it took doing that for me as an advisor to see, okay, this is you got a couple of different insurance companies that reimburse you for your marketing costs on your financial advisory firm. If you make a certain amount of production with that insurance company every year, it starts to get a little shady. The regulations are a lot looser in the financial industry around insurance companies as opposed to the securities side. And we got a younger audience, so you guys might not have to worry about that yet. But I'm just ranting. Just ranting like a silly goose. You know, I think there's not enough people in our industry that talk and act like a normal person. You can Google or YouTube any financial advisory firm, and the content around their company is so it's a great day here at XYZ Financial, and here's the latest market update. Shut the fuck up, man. And they're overdressed to the fucking nines. They obviously really care about what you think about them, because they know they're not really providing any extra value other than making it sound like they know what you need. It's bullshit. It's bullshit. So I kind of want to be a voice for the people, a rational voice, one that puts things in layman's terms, one that understands that these things I've learned throughout my career are not taken for granted, and that some people might benefit from them. So can investing make you rich? Yes, but you have to be disciplined. You have to be intentional. It's a lot like anything else in life. You want success on YouTube. You want success in your investment portfolio. You want success in your relationships. It just takes time. It takes consistency, and it takes discipline. It's not going to happen fast. I think in one of these questions I got, somebody asked, will investing make you rich fast? It can. It can make you poor faster. You try to get that quick thing. It's like anything else, man. People want stuff fast, and it just doesn't work that way sometimes. Sometimes there are special cases. That's what kind of makes it beautiful, right? There's kind of that silver lining, like, yeah, you could possibly get really rich really quick through investing. But I think the fallacy is when people start to think, no, that's me. That's me. I know everything about markets. Nobody knows everything. Just like nobody knows everything about nature. Nobody knows everything about, you could go down the list. And so a financial advisor that comes to you and acts as if they know everything, or even worse yet, says they know everything, run, because they're not honest. First and foremost, they're not honest with themselves, because they probably tell themselves that lie. So food for thought. Let's get into some other stuff. Where are we at? Damn, we're at 54 minutes. Cover an article or two. Get you guys on out of here. How about that? So, NVIDIA has, I have to confirm I'm not a bot. NVIDIA is hiding the cracks beneath the stock market surface. So basically the gist of this article is that NVIDIA stock has done incredibly. There's no questioning with the AI boom. There's high demand for semiconductor companies like NVIDIA. And we've even seen, we talked about it on the show last week, I believe, or the week before. We've seen the AI boom influence utility companies. There was a utility company that I can't remember the name of that has gone up 75% this year because they are the power supplier for the data centers that work on the AI. So it's wild. I mean, we're seeing headlines with Apple integrating with ChatGPT, large cybersecurity concerns there. Elon Musk came out and said, my employees will not be able to use an Apple phone if this becomes real. And it seems like it's becoming very real. So Elon Musk has teased at a, I don't know if it's a Tesla phone or an X phone or what he's going to call it, but man, I'd look at it. I mean, here's the thing too, though. Apple has notoriously made it hard for consumers to switch over to other types of smartphones, whether it's your data getting transferred over, whether it's the logins, whether it's the apps you have, the apps that are offered. Apple's going to make that really hard. And they already make it hard with the compatibility on the chargers. They change the chargers every two or three damn years so that you have to buy a new one. But I digress. So here's some of the nitty gritty on how NVIDIA has made the market look better than it is. The number of stocks making new highs versus new lows on the New York Stock Exchange is falling. It peaked in mid-March and has been trending low since. Later. The data since the middle of May shows NVIDIA has wholly overwhelmed the market. So the Bloomberg 500, used as a proxy for the S&P 500. That's the 500 largest companies that are publicly traded in America right now. That is what the S&P 500 is, for my viewers that may not know that. It's advanced by 2.46% and shows that since May 17th, NVIDIA has accounted for 81% of the gains. 156 stocks have moved up, while 345 have moved lower. Apple's the second biggest gainer, which has added 29, almost 30%. And that means that the Bloomberg 500, which again is a proxy, meaning the same metrics are being measured as the Standard & Poor's S&P 500, which is the 500 largest companies publicly traded in America that make up for the majority of the measures on how is the stock market doing. If you want to know how the stock market's doing, look at the S&P 500. There are a couple of funds like SPY. You can look up the ticker SPY. I think, what's the Vanguard fund? It's not VIG. VIG's a dividend fund. VU, maybe. There are a bunch of different funds you can look at. But just Google, how is the S&P 500 doing? And that'll give you a really good idea of how the stock market as a whole is doing. But I digress. This means that the S&P 500 would be lower without NVIDIA's gains and Apple's gains. So 153 stocks have advanced over the same time period, and 351 stocks have declined. The narrowing of breadth, that's how wide is the market, has been a theme for weeks, but not months. The narrative started with the Magnificent Seven. That is Apple, Netflix, Microsoft, NVIDIA, Facebook, or Meta. I'm missing two. Google. And then there's one more. Can't remember it for the life of me. But those seven stocks have accounted for the majority of the market's growth. And people are worried. People are worried because how long can seven companies hold up, let alone two? We're talking NVIDIA and Apple. It's going to be interesting, especially with interest rates. Interest rates are affecting the whole big picture, right? Macroeconomics. And the Fed, who controls interest rates, it's not the president. The Fed, the Federal Reserve Bank, determines what goes on with interest rates and inflation. So if you see presidential candidates on either side bragging about the lack of inflation. I'm thinking of one in particular. Inflation was flat in May. That has bragged about it. It's the Federal Reserve Bank. The Fed is the nickname that controls that. And the Fed earlier forecasted that there would be 3 rate cuts, right? So we're going to cut down interest rates since we hiked them after the whole COVID psyop, right? They've now dialed back to saying, well, we're probably only going to do 1 rate cut this year. And I would argue that it's going to end up being 0 because I don't think we're out of the woods in regards to inflation yet. We just aren't. It's bigger than us. Inflation is bigger than us. We put ourselves in the position we are in, right, with the whole COVID thing. It's taken 4 years now. And I'd argue it's going to take a couple more years to get the interest rates, the cost of housing, the cost of everyday goods back down. Because we printed all that money during COVID. We got to pay for it at some point. It's not free. Contrary to what politicians think, especially with their insider trading. We got a long road ahead. But the exciting thing for us Americans is that we've got so many things to improve on, and we're gonna improve on them. People are opening their eyes to the truth, and I'll leave it at that. What else do we got? We talked about Elon. We talked about Apple. Anything else? Pro Football Focus is, and we're going to wrap up the week here in a minute. Well, I got a couple clips, and then we'll send you home. No brain food this week. We'll get that at some point. Anything else? If you guys, leave a comment on this video if you're watching this far in on what else you'd like to see being talked about in terms of investing tips, finance tips, anything money related, even something that's going on in the market. Comment on this video and let me know what else you want to hear about. Nothing really too noteworthy. Okay. So that'll end the financial segment of this week's reinvigorated episode 23 of In the Jar. So got 2 clips here that I thought were just too good to pass up. You guys might be able to predict what one of them is, but Tom Brady, well, it's pretty easy now. Tom Brady spoke at the Patriots Hall of Fame induction. He was inducted, and he had this to say about whether late kids play football.
Everyone to play football for the simple reason that it is hard. It's hard when you're young to wake up in the off season at 6 a.m. to go train and work out, knowing that all your friends are sleeping in and eating pancakes. It's hard when you're on your way to practice, weighed down with all your gear, and it's 90 degrees out and all the other kids are at the pool or at the beach, and your body is already completely exhausted from workouts in 2-a-days. It's hard to throw, catch, block, and tackle, and hit kids when they're way bigger and way more developed than you, only to go home that night bruised and battered and strained, but knowing you have to show up again the next day for just the chance to try again. But understand this, life is hard. No matter who you are, there are bumps and hits and bruises along the way. And my advice is to prepare yourself. The truth is, you don't have to be special. You just have to be what most people aren't. Consistent, determined, and willing to work for it. No shortcuts. If you look at all my teammates here tonight, it would be impossible to find better examples of men who embody that work ethic, integrity, purpose, determination, and discipline that it takes to be a champion in life.
Bang! That shit gets me. Man, and so many people have commented on this video came out a couple of days ago of Tom Brady talking about why you should put your kids in the sport of football. But you got to teach your kids, and I don't have any, so I really shouldn't speak on this, but I feel like you got to teach your kids how to overcome hard. You got to teach yourself how to overcome hard and face things every day that push you a little bit into that uncomfortable zone. And each person has a different thing for that. It doesn't have to be football, but putting kids in jiu-jitsu, putting kids in strenuous situations, controlled strenuous situations that teach them that it's not going to always be pancakes and sitting on the couch in the summer getting ready to go to the pool. It's hard. And the earlier people learn that life is hard, the sooner you can confront yourself with hard things on a daily basis to overcome, become stronger, so that when life really does get hard, so that when shit hits the fan, you know exactly who you are, you know exactly what you need to do, and I'm forever blessed to have even been associated with the game of football, let alone continue to be. Beautiful speech from Tom Brady. I felt impelled to include that. And then there's this snippet from Nick Saban on, he was asked, I guess, of all your players that have been those guys, what is the determining factor? What is that X factor that you've seen in those guys? And he said this.
Why are the best guys the best guys? Starts number one with truth. You tell yourself the truth about what you're doing, how you're committed. Are you working hard? Are you preparing? Are you doing the things you need to do to be the best you can be? It starts with that. How many people are truthful with themselves about self-assessing the effort that you give, the intangibles that you play with, the toughness that you play with, knowing what to do, being responsible to do your job? But the best are the best because they tell the truth. They tell the truth about who they are, how they prepare, how they work, how they get ready to play, how they push themselves to be the best, the passion that they have to be the best, and they do it all the time.
Consistently telling yourself the truth. I've been wrestling with this myself lately. Am I telling myself the truth? Am I getting objective and detached enough to be able to look down on myself as if I'm watching from above this rooftop that I sit under, if I'm watching myself and the story I'm telling myself doesn't line up with what's really happening, you got a problem. And the beauty of it is that it can be fixed. And I'm no master of this yet. I'm sure I've told myself 4 lies today. But if you just take a look inside, and I've talked about this on the show before, but you want to find the truth? Go sit in the woods for an hour, uninterrupted. No phone. Or turn your phone off. Close your eyes. Listen to the trees and the wind. Listen to the birds. Listen to the wildlife. Listen to the wind. Listen to this damn whatever the hell's spinning outside making a squeaking noise. You'll find the truth. And it might not be what you want it to be. But we all know that to be truth deep down inside. I love y'all. I appreciate y'all tuning in. This is In the Jar, episode 23 with your boy, Dupe. Hope y'all liked the way we structured the show this week. We did it a little different. Less clips. More just focused juice on what we feel we have expertise on and can thus provide some value to whoever might be listening to this show. I love y'all. I appreciate y'all tuning in. I'll see ya.